Good evening. Welcome to Profiles. My name is Bob Willard, and I'll be your host this evening as we interview and spend some time with Imre Palo, conductor. Now, many of you may have seen Imre conduct, but you may not have seen the front of his face. I'm having the opportunity to see something other than the back of his head. So, Imre, welcome to Profiles.
Well, thank you. It's great being here. And sometimes when I go even in a company and people look at me, I said, let me turn around. You will recognize me then.
You were born in Budapest, and now you're in Bloomington, Indiana.
Yes.
Can you just sort of give us as much of your life story as we have time for?
I was born into a musical family. My father was an opera singer, later even the director of the Budapest Opera. And from early childhood, I was confronted with music. It's quite interesting. I think I was 4 or 5 years old when I first was brought to the opera. And from then on, very regularly, I must have, at that time of my life, I knew how to behave yet. Whenever the baritone died, and baritones usually die in operas.
And your father was a baritone.
And my father was a baritone. Okay. That's when they took me home. So I never knew that there was a final scene to Aida. Until I eventually got old enough to go by myself to the opera and didn't leave being pulled out by my mother.
Wondering if your father was still alive.
That's right. That's absolutely correct. And yes, I met music in a very early age, and I think I was 7 or so when I decided I wanted to be a conductor. And my father warned me very strongly. He said, son, this is a profession which is very hard. You will have to work very hard. You have to give up certain things just because becoming a conductor. I said, no. I looked at those conductors. It looks so easy.
And you didn't want to become a singer?
Well, no. It was always conducting. But I got some lessons from my father. He gave me some singing lessons. And obviously he didn't like the color or the quality of my voice because he said, son, with this voice and my name, you must not become a singer. And so, you know, it was music. Nothing ever really entered into my mind if I wanted to do something else. And also, Kodály was my godfather,
Zoltán,
the Hungarian
Kodály,
composer, Zoltán,
yes.
Kodály. And he took active part in my early musical education. And then several great Hungarian conductors whose greatness I now know to appreciate. At that time, I just knew that they were dear friends of my father. And they were very kind to me. Doráti, Fricsai, Ferencsik, just to name a few, who were really instrumental in me becoming a conductor and were always great examples in my life, which I wanted to grow up to follow and step in their footsteps. I started playing piano with 5, 6 years old, I think. Then I went to the conservatory. I studied composition because that was something which was important for becoming a conductor, Kodály believed, and
when
everybody
you say
else.
Conservatory, is this like high school age?
Exactly.
Okay.
So anyway, I went to the conservatory where I studied composition, and I continued the piano studies. Then, on Kodály's insistence, I had to learn cello. I studied flute just to have an idea of the wind instruments, and I studied several years of percussion. Then I finished my studies at the conservatory, and there was the question, where do I go? I wanted to go to the academy, and there were some, if I may say, political reasons, which didn't make it possible, and I had the opportunity to go to Austria one summer, and that's when I made my admission exam to the academy in Vienna. I got to Vienna in 1961, which was when I was 19 years old. And
you're talking about politics with the Eastern Bloc and all that.
Correct, correct. Really, because my father just refused to be further the director of the opera because he didn't want to run it in a political way. The Ministry of Culture didn't at that point quite appreciate him, just saying, I don't need you people and I'm not going to run this organization, so I rather resign, which he did, and went back to singing, which he said is more valuable and feels more valuable he doesn't need to be the director. And I think that that's just generally a very valid position. I think anybody who is in a leading position shouldn't need to be in that leading position. That's when they are really the ideal leaders. Somebody who needs the leadership position in order to be somebody instead of being somebody, and as a result they are leaders, is wrong. And that's how my father had the possibility to go back as a singer. He didn't need to be director of the opera company. And I think it's true for conductors, for musicians, or for anybody else. If you don't need a position, that's when you should be in that position, because then you can do that what you really, truly believe is good for that
given
organization.
Listen to your own dictates and something
like that. Exactly, exactly. And you don't have to make amends and don't have to do some things because you have to do it.
And look over your shoulder a lot. You know,
absolutely, absolutely.
So you went to Vienna instead of to Budapest.
To Budapest, that's correct. And I finished my studies in Vienna in 64. But during that time, I was very fortunate to already have started working in the profession in the European way. Conductors usually start as coaches, vocal coaches with opera companies, with festivals and so on. And so by 61, I already was coaching at the Salzburg Festival. I was coaching in 1962 at the Salzburg Festival, assisting Fritschai later with Böhm and with Karajan at the Salzburg Festival. And started also in Vienna. While I was studying in Vienna, I was also working there as coach time on a part-time basis at the State Opera in Vienna, as well as also on productions of the Viennese Festival, the Wiener Festwochen, that's the Viennese Festival, which takes place in the spring. And at that point, they usually did two opera productions there. So I was assisting Böhm on Lulu. I was assisting Böhm on the Daphne. I don't know if you know the recording, the Deutsche Grammophon recording, with Professor King singing in it. That's where I first met, second met Jimmy, because I met him in Salzburg in the summer, and then the next spring he was doing Daphne, and I was an assistant on that production. So some relationships and meetings go back a long, long way.
I'm going to pull you back to the itinerary here. You were at the Vienna Academy, and you had the opportunity then to work actually in your profession and not study with Hans Swarovski,
who was my teacher. And Hans Swarovski was very understanding, because I went to him. I said, you know, I need the money. Those were paid jobs. Mm-hmm. And I said, I can work with Karajan, I can work with Böhm. Leitner was, Ferdinand Leitner, also a very fine conductor whom I worked with at the festival. So I said, I will have to miss some of your classes. And Swarovski was very understanding, and I would do the same thing if a student would come today to me. He said, look, you are working in the profession. I'm preparing you for your profession. If you can do it in the true sense of it, you just go, come at the end of the semester, and I'll sign your report card. And so he was very understanding. I still went to some of the classes, but there was a half a year when nobody saw me at the academy in Vienna. I was just working at the State Opera in the morning, in the afternoon, in the evening, at the festival. I was working.
Well, you're learning, though.
And I was learning. The great part of it was the understanding, really, from the side of my professors at the academy, who didn't say, yes, but you didn't appear at that hour and that hour and that hour. They just said, okay, you are preparing for life.
But you were learning from legends.
Well, truly so. Truly so. I wouldn't want to miss, you know, just two words here from Karajan and three beats where he showed something that's how he wants it from Böhm. Those experiences still carry me the rest of my life. So, yes, it was a wonderful schooling, because it was a mixture of schooling at the school of the Academy in Vienna and working with these real giants of the profession, plus to go to rehearsals of these great people. The true school is going to rehearsals of great conductors, because that's where you really learn what are they asking those musicians to do, why do they ask those musicians to do. I regard a conductor really as a doctor. You have to be Number one, a good diagnostician. You have to diagnose what's wrong. How do you diagnose what's wrong? And then you have to be knowledgeable enough to write the correct prescription. So you've got to diagnose it, and you've got to correct it. One of the greatest, if not the greatest in that respect, was Dorati. I don't think I ever experienced anybody who was as good as orchestra educator, and if you want to call it orchestra doctor, as Dorati was.
Let's move on.
You're
starting to work in the opera field.
Yes. So I worked in at different festivals at the State Opera in Vienna and wanted to become a coach once I finished my studies in Vienna. And somehow there is always a divine intervention in my life. When I want to go this direction and God pushes me into that direction, for me eventually to realize that that was the better direction. Going back to Budapest, I wanted to go to the academy in Vienna, and God turned me this way and pushed me out to Vienna. Then in Vienna, I was pretty much a shoo-in to the State Opera as a coach. But somehow that didn't work out. God again turned me that way and pushed me that way. And I arrived to Wuppertal, which is a mid-sized, very decent opera company in Germany. Why it was good for me to get there as a coach instead of Vienna, that within 2 years being as a coach with that company, I started conducting. I wouldn't have had that chance in Vienna, where only the great conductors came in to conduct, to get there on the podium and do a performance. In Wuppertal had the chance. And you need the chance. The biggest difficulty for a young conductor is really getting an orchestra to work with. Every instrumentalist can practice on their instrument. You know, to get 40, 50, 60 suckers who are willing to put up with you as a beginning conductor where you don't know what you are doing, that's the most difficult part of becoming a conductor. And that's your instrument, and you have got to practice on that instrument. Sure. Nothing can replace that instrument to practice on, and that's a problem here, that's a problem anywhere. And here, I think the students have even a little bit more opportunity to practice on that instrument, having so many orchestras, and they get some opportunity. I wish they got more. I remember being thrown into my first operatic performance, or it was an operetta, I never forget, it was the Countess Maritza, never ever having been stood in a pit, never ever having worked with an orchestra and the stage up there in front of an audience. That was my christening by fire. First few minutes, I was just thinking, if I fainting, then maybe they let me out of here. And they didn't, and I stayed. And thank God I did. I did obviously all right. So they give me a second chance, and they give me a third chance. And that's how I got my chances into conducting. And I wouldn't have gotten that in Vienna. I would not have wanted to have my first operatic experience in front of the Vienna audience and in front of the Vienna Philharmonic. So, again, it was a good thing. So I was in Wuppertal for 4 years. First, I was conducting after I didn't do my own productions. I was just, you know, walking in and doing a performance.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually in my last year, I did my first own production in Wuppertal. And from there in 1968, I landed the position of so-called second conductor at the Düsseldorf Opera. Now, the Düsseldorf Opera Company is a major opera company, or maybe not the very top. If, you know, you say there is Hamburg, Munich, Berlin, or so in Germany, then it's one step below, but it's a major opera company. And there I was, so to say, the cleanup batter. So all the performances which other people didn't conduct or didn't want to conduct or couldn't conduct, I conducted again more without rehearsals than with rehearsals. But I conducted there about 110, 120 performances a season.
Yeah. Okay, you know, we haven't got to the United States yet, but why don't we take a break? You and I have been talking for a while. Let's hear some music. And did you bring anything that you've conducted that we could listen to?
Yes, there is. I was in Budapest this last fall, And we did a Gershwin evening, and a jazz group of a dear friend of mine, whom I went to school with at the conservatory. They live in Edmonton, and they came, and somebody made an arrangement of the Porgy and Bess for his group and symphony orchestra. And we did this with the Radio Symphony in Budapest, and I brought a CD of that.
Well, let's listen to it.
Great.
Okay. We have just heard an adaptation of Porgy and Bess, conducted by Imre Palla, who's our guest today, and that's the Budapest Radio Symphony. How did you get to the United States?
How did I get into the United States? The first time I came to the United States, my debut I made with the National Symphony, and that was based on an invitation of Antal Dorati, whom I mentioned previously. It was a dear friend of my father and gave me this opportunity on the summer series of the National Symphony. And then I got an invitation to come and conduct at the New York City Opera, first for one performance. Julius Rodel invited me to do Butterfly. And obviously it seemed to have gone quite well, because he came and offered me that I can join the company and stay as long as I wanted to. And at that point, I was interested to for a change, and New York was always a city which excited me. And so the invitation came at the right time, and I joined the City Opera and started off with a big, major new production, which was Korngold's Tote Stadt, which came back to New York after that many years, when first Yeritsa, I understand, did it at the Metropolitan. And so in 1974, we did it at the City Opera, and that was really my debut with the City Opera Company. And from then on, I was with the company for on and off. I was there a year ago still. But regularly, so to say, in every year, I was there good 13, 14 years until the 90s. Or end of 80s.
Well, were you doing any other conducting in the New York area? Or
yes, well, I eventually, having joined the City Opera, there was an opening. There was a symphony orchestra upstate New York, not too far north from New York, the Hudson Valley Philharmonic. And I got the music directorship of that symphony orchestra. And so I really had the best of two worlds. I had there my symphonic home. And I moved upstate. I was commuting to New York. And I had the City Opera plus the symphony orchestra, where we had a concert series of about 8 symphony concerts. It was a wonderful orchestra. And I learned a lot from them, and I hope they learned a lot from me. And I was there for 15 years when I think it was time that our ways parted. But while it lasted, it was a wonderful experience for me there and the City Opera. And plus, I still had the chance to go around, and I conducted a lot in the United States with different opera companies. Even if it was Philadelphia, Washington, you name it, Cleveland. Went up a lot to Canada, Vancouver, Winnipeg, Edmonton, Calgary, Toronto. In 89, I somehow got a little itchy to do something in Europe. I wanted to do more Wagner, and I wanted to do more Strauss, which is tougher to find in this country, in the regional opera companies, and even at the City Opera. And I thought I'll find that in Europe. And I had a meeting with Gary Bertini, who just at that point became the music director of the Frankfurt Opera. And I said, "Maestro, could you use me there?" He says, "Very much so. But you have to come there and do a performance, and then let's see how the orchestra reacts. And yes, I would like very much you to come there." Then I went there, did a Bohème. Again, it seemed to go well, because the next day they called me, "Yes, we want to make a contract." So I became the principal guest conductor of the Frankfurt Opera, which meant that I had to spend there 6 months in a total, not, you know, it could have been in piecemeal, but 6 months. And just a week before I left for Frankfurt, the news came through the wires that the Frankfurt Opera burnt down.
Oh.
I don't know if you heard about that, but that was 89 or 90. So I get to Frankfurt and the opera burned down. So we had to go into a different building, in the same building, but we took over the stage of where the legit theater was, not opera, but theater, which was a smaller place. And so here I'm in Frankfurt wanting to do Strauss and Wagner and not being able to do it because the size of the hall where we went to play until the opera, which it took 2 years to rebuild. So I did exactly the same repertoire which I did here, which was the Bohèmes, the Traviatas, the Figaros, the whatever else. I did Rusalka, Rigoletto, God knows. But it was the repertoire which I could do here also. I did it in Frankfurt. Then I started to branch out a little bit, started to conducting in Belgium, in Norway, different other companies. I conducted in Berlin, I conducted in Karlsruhe, the Badische Staatsoper. So I became eventually, when my contract ran out in Frankfurt, I became a freelancer and I started freelancing. Living in Germany, running.
Well, living in a suitcase, I imagine,
well,
then if you become
exactly,
yes.
Went back to Israel, also did there with the new Israeli opera, I did Faust there. Returned to Budapest finally after almost 30 years of absence, which was a very wonderful experience. And I spent 7 or 8 years doing that, also coming back to the United States. That's when I, in 91, I eventually gave up the Hudson Valley because it just wasn't quite fair. And that's when, through a dear friend of mine, I found out that IU is looking for a conducting professor. And I really didn't, I knew a lot about IU. I always heard great things. I heard great things about the opera program. I knew, as I mentioned previously, some of the professors on the faculty. So it was just the right time, I think, when I came to Bloomington, because I was ready to spend more time in one place and find an artistic, human, and home. Where I can be at home as a human being as well as a musician. And that's what I really found at IU. And when I came here, I just fell in love with this school. This is such a unique institution. I never saw the like of it anywhere.
So you came, you saw, you conducted, and you stayed.
And I stayed, absolutely.
And they asked you to stay.
They asked me to stay.
Okay, that's wonderful. Well, now we got you here. Now let's hear you conduct something from here.
Yes, and that will be the Sibelius Symphony Number 2.
Well, we're not going to listen to all of it.
No. I wouldn't ask you to do so.
No, but what part would?
I think it's just fine from the beginning.
Okay. We have just heard a section of the Symphony No. 2 of Jean Sibelius, the first movement conducted by our guest Imre Palo with the Indiana University Philharmonic. Now, you were going to tell us a story about that.
Yes, which is quite interesting. When I first did the Sibelius second, this was with the Hudson Valley Philharmonic, and I spent a lot of time on that symphony, studied it forwards, backwards, upwards, downwards, loved it very much. I still do. And I thought that I really knew it very well, and after having done the concert, I was really proud, as, you know, you are not always happy what you are doing on a given evening, but this was one of the evenings where I went home and I said, I did as well as I can at this point of my life, I believe, and was truly proud. And that summer I went to Tanglewood, and as it happens, Bernstein was doing Sibelius too. And it was an experience which made me very humble, because suddenly I heard things in that symphony which obviously I didn't discover, and he did, maybe in a longer lifetime, maybe with a greater talent, maybe with a greater insight. I'm not questioning any of those. And so out of that, eventually I wanted to do it again and put a little more wisdom in it. I hope there is a little more wisdom in this rendition. I don't know. I never double-checked again what he did. I just remember being highly enthusiastic about his interpretation and being put into my place, which I think is a very good thing for younger conductors to... occasionally being told you are not as great as you think you are.
But that's how you learn, isn't it?
And that's how you learn. And another one where I learned a great lesson in humility was when I was working, that was earlier in my career, when I was working with Maestro Dorati, as I mentioned, he was a close friend, and he did the recordings with the Philharmonia Hungarica of the Haydn symphonies, mm-hmm. of all the Haydn symphonies. And that was in the late 60s, early 70s. At that time, as I mentioned previously, I was in Düsseldorf. So I was close enough, Philharmonia Hungarica was in Mal, and what Dorati did, made his markings in the scores, sent it to Mal, they put those markings into the orchestral parts, then the score came to me, I studied it and went over and kind of prepared the pieces for Dorati's coming and then putting it on the recording. And I rehearsed with them all these Haydn symphonies. I did at least 35, 40 myself, which was also a great opportunity to learn all these pieces and learn it under his guidance. Anyway, I went there, I rehearsed it, and the rehearsal went well, and I said, you know, I mean, yes, Dorati is more famous than I am, so, I mean, he deserves to do those recordings, but I could do them just as well, and why Dorati, I could do that just as well, and I'm doing such a great job on it.
I can see the fall is coming.
yes, and how? Then I am going over to his recording session doing these symphonies, which I prepared so exquisitely and so incredibly well. And the addition, what he still could add in musical insight, in musical perfection, and that's where I'm saying that he was just the penultimate, really, person who could... diagnose and prescribe the medicine. It was just incredible. And suddenly I said, what was I, 28, 29 years old? I said, there is a reason behind of Dorati doing the recordings and me being his assistant. That's just, there is a truth and reality in life.
Well, you know, this leads to a whole different question. I mean, it's the same question, actually. What is it? I mean, there's a lot of people that can beat rhythms and can study the score, but what is it that makes a conductor, one great and one who may have equivalent talent, just a conductor?
Well, then you probably don't have equivalent talent. But what does it... look, there is always... one part of it is the unexplainable. What makes a conductor... let's go a little back. What does make a conductor per se? And then we can go into the better and worse part of it. What I believe what makes a conductor is a profound knowledge of the orchestra and the functioning of the orchestra, the ability of the given instruments, what they can do, how they can function, how they play loud, how they play soft, elementary, but nevertheless, how fast a passage can be done. So elementary knowledge of the orchestra's ability of different instruments. Then a thorough and deep knowledge of the piece and a thorough preparation how this piece is going to be worked with that given orchestra. One of my fatherly friends, Fritschei, always said, you must go to a rehearsal. The first rehearsal you go to, you have to have already the sound in your ears, what you want this orchestra to sound, what this given piece you want to sound. And then you must be able to tell the difference between how they sound or how you want them to sound and make them sound the way you want to sound. So a tremendous deep and thorough preparation is needed just to be a conductor. Anybody who thinks you just go out and wave your arms because he studied music or can't play the piano is wrong. And there is the necessity of the experience on that given instrument. As I said, my experience in Düsseldorf, where I did those 110, 120 performances, the apprenticeship with great conductors, where you learn how these conductors... so just pure knowledge of the
those
music...
those are like your practice sessions, then, aren't
you? You have to have your practice session, and you have to have learned the trade. And this is a trade as well as playing the piano. If you want to be a pianist, you have to have practiced that much on the piano. You can't be a great musician and a great knower of the music and sit down the first time to the piano and play the piano and you say you are a pianist. That just doesn't happen. And a lot of people do say sometimes now that I'm a conductor and they stand up in front of the orchestra where they never stood before. Some of them because of their illustrious musical career on a given instrument, suddenly stand in front of the world's greatest orchestras, which is their luck because those orchestras would play without them just as with them, or they play despite of them well. This is a trade which has to be learned, which has to be practiced. And anybody who tells me that they can do without that practice and without apprenticeship years is a liar. It doesn't work that way, Bob.
Okay.
I just am not a believer. So, all that has to be there to begin to be able to call yourself a conductor. I tell you honestly, I am now past my 50th year, and maybe the last 5-6 years in my life, and I started conducting when I was 24, 25, and since then I am conducting pretty much nonstop. And the last 5 years I start feeling really comfortable that when I stand in front of an orchestra, I truly know, and my hands, my technical part of my conducting, that I truly know why am I standing there and I truly know what am I doing there. Now, I can't be that dumb that I couldn't have known it 20 years ago, but if I compare it now, I really start believing it now. And anybody who doesn't have that experience and doesn't put that experience in front of them will not be what he should be. So that's where it starts. After that, having this deep knowledge, having paid your dues as an apprentice, having done all the conducting which makes you a conductor, having done your homework on that given score, then why are you better than others or worse than others? That's a question of leadership quality. How do you relate to an orchestra? With some orchestras, you are better with others. Thank God I didn't have many bad experiences, but I know two experiences, and I won't mention where I just couldn't do the job with that given orchestra. Not even that they were not nice, Not that they were not a good orchestra, but the chemistry between them and me just wasn't the chemistry which makes it work. And since it has to be a certain chemistry between the orchestra and the conductor. And it's not even a quality, it's just a question of relationship.
Well, do orchestras have different personalities? I know they have different sounds. So that...
Oh, yes. They absolutely have different personalities. Some work faster, some work slower. Some have humor. Some don't have humor. Some have a section which has humor. Another has another section which doesn't have humor. After that is really the personality. There is something, I think, in some way, you have to be a leader to be a conductor. You have to have a personality which induces those musicians to believe that what you are doing is correct.
Well, let's listen to a recording you have where the orchestra believed were doing it correct. What do we have?
I hope they do. I think we have the Fledermaus Overture. That is with the Festival Orchestra. I don't know how many believed in it. I did.
Okay, let's hear it. We have just heard the overture to Fledermaus, played by the Festival Orchestra, conducted by our guest, Imre Palo. How do you recognize, when you're working with a student, those students that have the touch, the talent? What is it you look for?
There has to be an innate talent. There has to be a certain amount of manual talent also for conducting. There are exceptions to that. There were conductors there who had absolutely no manual talent, but then they had such incredible musical conviction of what they did that it just overrode, so to say. They may be less manual talent than some other people had. So you recognize the manual talent, you recognize the musicianship. When they stand in front of an orchestra, you really can see how do they relate to an orchestra. They don't even have to rehearse. Just stand in front of them and conduct something. You really get the feeling, are they truly listening to that orchestra? Are they truly having an interaction between the orchestra's playing and their conducting? And that's what you are really looking for. Then you get into the classroom, and there are a lot of things which you can eventually teach, which doesn't have to be inborn. If there is an inborn musical talent, and that's what you want to see at the first place, that they can relate their musical feelings with their hands, with their eyes, with their body, with their facial expression. If you see a sign of that, then you say, all right, there is something there. Will they arrive? Will they really become conductors? The percentages are against you. In Vienna, we were 30-some-odd in a conducting class. I think at this point, three of us conduct. And there were more talented people. There are only three who are still in the business. But they get waylaid. They don't want to face the difficulties. They don't get the openings in life which you need. And some people don't get it, and for that you pray to God and you thank God. And yet it may come your way or not. I thank God every evening the way he led me through life and gave me the opportunities to conduct.
Well, I think we thank God, too, for the opportunity of having you here and having you with us today. I enjoy the operas you conduct. I am delighted to have the opportunity to meet you. I hope the audience has enjoyed it as much as I have. This is Profiles. I'm Bob Willard. You're listening to WFIU, and thank you so much for listening tonight. And thank you, Imre, for being with us.
Thank you for having me here.
The program you just heard was recorded in the studios of WFIU in January of 1999. Production assistance came from Michael Paskash and Christina Kuzmich. For WFIU, thanks for listening.